we are now, this is a collage from David, which he did. When we are trying to define a concept or find a concept for the city of Berlin, we are now trying to identify cities within cities, areas which have a strong urban identity or a social memory, or which are places of collective memory, which would then be reinforced and sort of sit in a nature grid as small places of highly condensed architectural and urban quality. And this is the plan of the city within the city for Berlin, which we proposed, where you would have a piece like this here that I'll show you some later, which looks like Manhattan, and this piece here, which looks like Karlsruhe, a medieval piece here, a linear city here, that new development, which all could exist next to each, the development of the Märkische Viertel, which all could exist next to each other. You would have a series of cities sitting along the Havel as river cities, and each one would compete with the other one, but it's intellectually or conceptually a contradiction, but it is as a whole a complementary plan, which is a very pluralistic concept and an open plan. Now, it comes close to the antique plan of Rome, where you have those elements of distinctly different quality sitting in an area completely unrelated to each other. Now, those cities could, for instance, be like an area which we discovered here, which is exactly this one here, which is exactly like the city of Mannheim, a small place with the castle here, with a big axis which divides it into two parts. There's the castle, and then the axis is the Schlossallee, and those two grid-like structures. Or a linear structure which we discovered in the city here, which would be this linear structure here, for which you could use as an image Leonidov's project for Magnitogorsk. And it could be slowly converted and transformed into something like that. Or the Kreuzberg area, where there used to be a railroad station for which is no need in Berlin anymore, and that could turn it into a public park with the block structure around it. And then it's actually like a miniaturized piece of Manhattan. So you find the city, and finally, the Kreuzberg area, the Friedrichstadt area, which is close to the historical center, which is in the morphological structure or in an idealized form seen in Karlsruhe, which is a radial city. Now, this is now a city within that city, Friedrichstadt, with the Mehringplatz, which was the old rondelle, as a place for military exercise. It was not a place for the ornamentation of the city or for pleasure. And even at that time, the Berliners took pieces from Paris, which they introduced as urban pieces into the city, like the Place Victoire, the Place Vendôme, and the Place Royale. And they took them almost literally into the city. This is the situation now. What we found are a series of isolated blocks. This is a museum done by Compius' grandfather, which is going to be converted into a museum again. And those blocks now are sitting there like palaces in a park. And this actually gave us the idea what to do, how to interpret this. You know, we tried to work with the situation as we found it. We found objects like this, which look like sort of heretic palaces or leftovers from a large city, or buildings which could be shipped away, which are packaged and ready for shipment. And you have those walls here that determine the block and then the houses inside. Now, this is the proposal for Friedrichstadt, which is actually a series of different plots, different interpretations of plots. The last one which I showed you is this one here, where we propose to wrap a lower building around. One of the first ones is this building, on the corner here. Now, Friedrichstadt, we propose then to have a sort of transformation of blocks, where you would have the block and the street being one and the same, or the street is beginning to formulate space and the blocks are beginning to have their own identity. They are not repetitive like in this case. And then finally, the palaces or the blocks, that does exist, this part does exist, and so on, sitting in a park. And as the last one, the block as formulating a stage or a panorama for a plaza. Now, Schinkel did a project. He never did a complete city plan, but he worked for his plan of the center of Berlin, and this is actually where we took off for the Friedrichstadt project. He built within an existing, could we focus this a little bit? He built within an existing situation a few objects which he added to complete this year. This is the Schauspielhaus here with those two existing churches. This is the Armory by Stühler, and Schinkel put the Neue Wache here. He completed this plaza here, which is called the Lustgarten, with the oldest museum, a series of blocks along the canal here, the Bau Academy across the castle. So all elements very cautiously and very carefully sort of assimilated and blended into the existing urban structure in order to urbanize it or to add it or whatever. And this is Schinkel's, this is Gärtner's drawing on Schinkel's panorama for the city, where he explains the city to his friend Boyd from the Friedrich-Werdersche Church, and then points out, for instance, the building academy here, and which he built, and finally, the this is the Schauspielhaus, the Gendarmenmarkt, and on this northern side of the panorama, where Humboldt, his friend, explains the city to some of his friends with the castle here, the Altes Museum, the church which Schinkel designed, which later on got destroyed, and somewhere is the Alte Wache. In other words, those objects are standing in the center of a city, like mini cities within the center. Now, there were a few others, and Colin already showed that slide. There were a few modern heroes that worked with the situation of Friedrichstadt, for which we are developing the plan, which might turn into the building exhibition in 1984. Among them was Hilbersheimer, and I don't have much to add. This is the Schauspielhaus, where Schinkel drew the panorama with those two churches here. And Hilbersheimer wanted to replace that whole thing with those Marxist structures, which represent a total equality, and also represent the rules of the Siam, which were developed at this time. And but later on, Corbusier did a plan when they had a competition for the Hauptstadt Berlin, which is again Friedrichstadt here, with the axes, which he turned into a motorway, with the circular plaza over here. The Potsdamplatz is here, and I guess the Unter den Linden is there, which is the Brandenburger Tor. And then applied objects of his own into, blended objects of his own experience and his own architectural make into the situation, including some of those Saint-Denis high-rise buildings right in the historical center, and so on. He completely neglected any kind of historical precedence, only when it was necessary, because he had to probably to keep the infrastructure underground, going all the canals and the telephone wires and so on. And the last one, as a little critique on it, is Peter Smitson's plan for the same area, again, Friedrichstadt here, where Peter proposed a pedestrian circulation, the street in the air, which with which he was occupied at that time very strongly, propagated it as the latest architectural theme, and then that street in the air connecting a series of high-rise buildings, and then he put some of his strange, warlike animals into the center of the city and destroyed and neglected the urban fabric. This was the way the modern movement dealt with the city, replacing it by a completely new concept. They didn't learn anything from Schinkel's humanist approach to the city, to plant in very carefully little pieces. Schinkel's idea about the city, and also the sort of model, the key for what we are trying to do in Friedrichstadt, is probably best represented in the Kleinecke Schlosspark. And if you go there, you find those sort of isolated, but somehow dialectically connected statements of different quality, like the castle, as I said, which is a classical piece, and an Italian forming a courtyard. Or you find an Italian style building, which is called the Devil's Bridge, sitting in the park as another one of those objects. And finally, that little church in the park, which was decomposed, reassembled in a classical order, in these expressing a humanist, what I mean a humanist, an educated background of composition in the park. And finally, a sort of English cottage sitting in the park in a totally different style, which is the hunting court, which the city of Berlin, by the way, and there's only a footnote, offered the College of Architecture as a branch in Berlin to do some studies on Schinkel, if you wish. And the last one, a sort of the casino, which is a pergola building where the house itself turns into a pergola. This is a calendar with the bird on top. And one could talk about hours and hours about the kind of transformation which goes on from the water up to the house and into the house where finally the columns are painted on the wall and so on. It's an incredible, sophisticated statement of an architectural language and architectural sophistication. Now, as the Kleinecke Park is the model for Friedrichstadt, and as perhaps the Kleinecke Park is the model for Schinkel's idea of the reorganization of the center of Berlin, so is the entire Hafenlandschaft, which actually was designed by King William IV, the great promoter of Schinkel, so is the entire Hafenlandschaft a model for the idea of Berlin as a city within the city. And it contains the key for what I showed you first in that little sketch. If we depart from that building here, which is the casino, the pergola building here, to which belonged a ship as a building as well, the ship was placed there, not only in the drawing, but actually as the most extreme piece of architecture, the most sophisticated piece of craftsmanship, it belonged, and also sort of signaling sort of the kind of relationship to a other world, to a universe and things like that, like a spaceship, it was placed to the to complement the structure which did exist. And as you leave it, pieces of memory appear in the landscape. And depending what your memory is, you can fill it with life or it stays completely dead. It depends on you if the city will be a lively city or if it will be a dead city. Those pieces, like for instance castle, appears in the back, and as you come closer, you see it's in a built in a Gothic style. It represents a totally different architectural expression and language and so on. And your fantasy could then translate it into a city which would have a different quality from the other one and a different identity. And as you leave the castle, the Babelsberg castle, and you go on the lake, another piece of memory comes out of the fog and appears in front of you, and you might discover it. Some people had great difficulties when we went through with the boat to have the fantasy and imagination to see the possibility of a city actually being, because Schinkel never wrote about that, actually being built here, but in object. That piece of an Italian town, or it's an Italian style for Stüler's church, if you wish, for the Highlands Church, appears in front of you, and then if you go on, another piece appears in the back. It's all part of the same scene, and you go closer, and it is a fragment of a medieval castle built as a fragment. It was not a medieval castle. It's highly artificial, as the environment of a city within the city would be, even the nature, highly artificial. It would not be just the nature of a rural, primitive nature, but a sophisticated and determined nature. And then another piece, the diary, appears in the air, which was built, I guess, 1803 or 1780, I don't know. And this, then, is the idea which you find again in Caspar David Friedrich's painting of that winter landscape, with pieces of history, with the pieces of the collective memory being placed into the landscape and visited by the people and filled with life or death or whatever, but having their expression and having their part in it. And then Schinkel, what he actually dreamed of, is expressed in his painting, because he expressed himself as a painter as well in that city, in the Gothic city, as he calls it, a medieval city, on the waterfront, for which he constructed this gigantic Gothic dome, cathedral, or for that matter, Glänze, with the Valhalla, which is an exaggerated Parthenon, sitting as a piece in that Arcadian garden, in the landscape, as a piece of high identity, as this one here is that medieval piece, the Gothic piece, sitting in that Arcadian valley as an idea for the city. And finally, Schinkel's interpretation of the Acropolis, where he proposed, if you can focus it, please, where he proposed for the Bavarian king, who was king in Greece, an extension of the Acropolis by leaving all the existing buildings like the Parthenon and so on, and added new ones. Now, it must be recognized, and I have to make a few quotes on Schinkel, which would explain probably what we have in mind. It must be recognized that men like Schinkel did in many instances complete rather than originate urban settings. Certainly the problem of organizing an existing section within a city is far more demanding than creating an ideal city plan on virgin soil. To finish or to correct what previous ages had left incomplete or neglected demanded respect for the old and the ability to meaningfully adjust old patterns to new needs. Unlike Leo von Klenze in Munich or Friedrich Weinbrenner, you saw a slide in Karlsruhe, Schinkel transformed areas within the established urban fabric rather than adding new sections of a comprehensive design. Not a single commission given to him in Berlin or elsewhere called for the execution of an entire quarter or even a large-scale urban unit. Unlike Ludwig I of Bavaria, Friedrich Wilhelm III never ordered his architect to design a monumental civic plaza or to unify parts of his capital by means of impressive avenues, plazas, and so on. Schinkel did not restrict the range of his vocabulary of form, expression, and style to the lessons he received from the Gillies and Genzes. He found inspiration in the simplicity of an Italian farmyard, the majesty of Michelangelo's Campidoglio, and the logic of the English factory. His incomplete teaching manual on architecture reveals that the lesson of Winckelmann, Fichte, Goethe, and Durand had been firmly understood and then reinterpreted in his own creative way. It is inconsequential whether he used the Doric or Ionic order, modern or proto-functionalist schemes. It is important that he emulates principles rather than imitated forms. And Alfred Messel called Schinkel, or considered him, to be the chief representative of the so-called theoretical academic rationalists, branch of Berlin's building tradition. And other critics of the first half of the 20th century continued to interpret his importance to modern architectural thought as proto-functionalist in theory and Franco-Prussian rationalist in practice. And referring to his design of the museum, Mies noted that the final solution for the utilization of the site permitted a building of clarity and precision, which I believe will stand in harmony with the tradition of Schinkel in Berlin. I believe that the most valuable lesson to be drawn from Schinkel's achievement focuses on his outstanding ability to assimilate his own new additions into the urban fabric of existing buildings and spaces. Despite his constant concern for professional excellence and an uncompromising discipline in the design and execution of his own buildings, Schinkel always looked beyond the narrow limits of a floor plan or the outlines of a single facade. With the skill of a panorama painter and the imagination of a stage designer, he embraced the rhythm of scale and proportion relating to the total scene. And it's quite interesting, and let me quote one thing by Schinkel himself, what he says. As in any branch of art, life has to be visible in architecture. One has to recognize the process by which the idea is formulated, and the way in which the entire imagery of nature is ready and eager to satisfy the idea. A work of architecture must not stand as a finished and self-sufficient object. True and pure imagination, having once entered the stream of the idea that it expresses, has to expand forever beyond his work, and it must venture out, leading ultimately to the infinite. It must be regarded as the point where one can make an orderly entry into the unbreakable chain of the universe. Striving, budding, crystallizing, unfolding, driving, splitting, fitting, drifting, floating, pulling, pressing, bending, bearing, placing, vibrating, connecting, holding, lying and resting, these are the ways in which architecture must manifest life. And his motto was, and I have to say it in the language of Schinkel himself, unser Geist ist nicht frei, wenn nicht Herr seiner Vorstellung ist, which means our mind is not free if he is not in command of our perception. And then he says, jeder freie Moment ist ein seliger. Every free moment is a great one. And this is what we thought the city could turn into, and it's actually not a city, but it is an image of a city. Thank you very much.